to the 12th episode of Season 4 of the Ubuntu UK podcast. It's Tuesday, the 2nd of August 2011, and in this episode, we're going to discuss Novacut and review the Mini laptop. We will, of course, cover the latest news, events, bit about Ubuntu, announce the winner of the microserver competition, and go over your feedback. I'm Mark, and with me this week are Tony.
Hello, Mark.
Laura.
Hello.
And Alan.
Hiya.
Oh, good.
So, Tony, what have you been up to since the last show?
I'm glad you asked me first. it's been a long old 2 weeks or so since the last one. The main thing, I did a fantastic wedding photography workshop up in London with a lady called Jasmine Starr, who's a very famous Californian
wedding photographer
and her awesome husband, JD, who's a really cool guy.
Cool.
Yeah. Awesome.
Also, did you learn lots of tips? Awesome.
Yeah, it was really interesting watching her work, and we had a photo shoot with a real couple, but most of it was about the business side of it and branding and lots of things. And it was really good. And I met lots of other photographers and things as well. So it's a kind of a networking thing too. It was really good.
Brilliant.
Cool.
Yeah.
Laura, how about you?
I've been reading lots in the sunshine in the garden.
It has been very nice and sunny, hasn't it?
It's been lovely.
What have you been reading?
Tales of the City 1-8.
Yes.
End to end.
Those books I've read.
In about a day.
Oh, yeah, crikey. Each one about a day, yeah.
Did you read them on an e-book reader of some kind or...?
No, they're on the shelf up there.
Ah, okay. Oh, proper books.
Proper books. Yeah, legacy reading devices.
I did actually, because I was reading so much, my wrist started hurting from holding the book.
Yeah, that's why I don't like books, but I do like e-readers, because it's having your thumb in the fold and holding it open.
You didn't have Tony here to hold the books, were you?
No.
I was busy taking photographs.
Oh, dear.
Alan, what have you been doing?
Tux paint.
Oh,
yes. I think I mentioned previously that I've set up a couple of old netbooks for my kids,
yes.
And one of them said something like, "Have you still got that painting program?" And I thought, "Oh gosh, yes." So I put Tux paint on there, and they both played with Tux paint. And Sam loves drawing pictures, but unfortunately, they've used up a lot of ink on my printer because one of the things Tux paint does is when you create a new picture, the first thing it says is, "What colour background would you like?" So he chooses a bright blue background. So there's this solid colour, and then he does a little picture in the middle and prints it. And out comes all my ink on a piece of paper,
nice. Which
was fun. So I tweeted about that and about the fact that my son is eating all my, well, not eating, but consuming, should I say.
Times are hard in the Pope household.
Yes, and printer ink is so cheap. So I tweeted that I'm running out of ink. And a few people suggested, including one guy suggested, there's some settings you can tweak in Tux Paint. There's actually a separate config tool called Tux Paint Config.
And secret.
I didn't realize one of the options is to change the video resolution, because by default it's in a window and you can't maximize it and it doesn't fit on the little netbook screen.
I didn't realize that.
And that really annoyed me. And then I saw in Tux Paint there's an option that says make it full screen and use the native resolution. Oh, brilliant. And there's a button that says...
Background always white.
allow printing or not. And you can say how many minutes must pass between one print and the next or something like that. So you can limit how many they can print per day. And I thought that's really
nice, yeah.
And the tip, I sent a reply to the guy saying, "Oh, that's really great. Thanks very much." And then I followed the guy's Twitter profile, and it turns out he's the author of Tux Paint.
Brilliant.
He should know then,
yeah.
Presumably.
So I thought that is really great, and it's kept my kids so entertained for the summer holidays that I saw he had a little donation thing on his website, so I sent him some money to say thank you very much.
Excellent.
For the free software that my kids absolutely love.
That's cool. Good. What about you, Mark?
I've been pulled my Joggler out of its dusty box and pimped it. I saw
got rhinestones all over it, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, I've given it a heat sink.
Oh right, have to cut the back open, don't you?
I had to take it all apart. I had to cut a hole in the plastic heat sink that it's got inside it, and cut a hole in the case and wedge a metal heat sink in, so now it actually conducts some heat
sinks
away.
Heat. Yeah.
And I've also been running Android on it because someone's just come out with a very nice Android image for it, which works. Because when I first got it, someone had done like a really early build of Android x86, which was really, really laggy and just not usable at all. But this new one is really top notch. Installing apps is a bit hit and miss, but other than that, it's really usable.
And does it use the Paul's Bow video card all right?
use the, sorry, what?
Paul's bow, the GMA 500 video card. Does it all work okay?
It seems to. I've not had any problems. I've been, it comes with B player installed. I've been watching, you can stream live TV onto it.
Oh, I've got to do
and
this.
Obviously, it works, like the on-screen keyboard works properly because it's designed to be used with a touchscreen.
Yeah.
With Ubuntu, I kept finding myself being stuck in like a full screen app where I couldn't then get out of it because I didn't have a keyboard plugged in. Whereas Android is designed to be able to get out of it. And they've got it all set up with some, there's a utility called Button Savior, where if you're in a full screen app and it doesn't have the toolbar along the top because there's no hardware buttons on the Joggler.
So you can
pull out this little dock from the side which has the buttons on it.
Nice.
Yeah, it's really good. If you've got a Joggler, you should definitely check it out.
Excellent.
Cool. Anything else?
I also, one of my favourite artists who's on Twitter, Ginger from the Wild Hearts, posted today saying that he was launching a new project on a thing called Pledge Music, which is sort of like Kickstarter, but for music artists. So they'll say, I'm planning this project, I need some money to do it. And, you know, various levels of pledge will get you like special like signed copies or limited editions of the finished product. And so I wanted him to make another album, so I thought I'd give him some money towards it. You basically just pre-buy the album,
right?
Which I would have done. I would have bought it when it came out, so I figured I might as well buy it now. And it got to his full 100% in about 6.5 hours, I think, which is the fastest that Pledge Music's ever done, apparently.
Cool. Excellent. Yeah. All right.
And we'll put a link to that, I guess, in the show notes.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Let's get on with the show.
Let's talk video editors.
Yes, please.
There's been a recent lot of pimping of a project called Novacut.
Yeah.
Which you've probably seen. They've had a Kickstarter drive going for, I think, about a year now to try and raise funds to get the lead developer working on creating this application. And I wanted to discuss it and a bit about video editing.
Yeah. It's one of those things that free software hasn't really done properly yet.
Well, video editing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think one of the aims behind, for those who are not aware, the Novacut project aims to create a professional video editing tool. But the key point is that it's a collaborative video editing tool for people who are not necessarily in the same location.
Which is quite often in the online world.
I think it's inspired by the software development process where, you know, you have a version control system and people are spread out all around the world and they can all contribute. So it seems like a nice idea.
Mm.
It's one of those areas where there have been a lot of new projects started over the years. I remember the Lug Radio guys talking about Diva with a very dodgily named episode. And that, you know, was a flash in the pan and came and went. In fact, one of the people who's commented on this Novacut project has either created or published a graph of the various different video editing projects, open source, that have been released over the last 10 years. And there are quite a lot. And most of them have gone, well, less than a year before sort of dying out, it seems. Off the top of my head, the ones that I've used are, you know, like PitterV, KDN Live, Blender, Cinelera, Kino, Lives, Open Movie Editor.
But all of those you've mentioned still exist, except that last one, Diva.
Yes.
All of those still exist, and they all still are under some level of active development.
Yes.
So it's not necessarily a foregone conclusion that any video editor that's developed in a free software environment dies.
Well, Kino apparently hasn't had any updates for 2 years, but according to this graph.
Oh, okay.
But it's still available in the repository.
And it still works.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the things it seems to happen a lot is, we had a video sent to us by the OpenShot movie guys when we sort of said, oh, there's another new video editor, that's great, you know, if it ever works. And then they sent us a video of us saying that over examples of it working.
Yes.
And
that one has actually come along a long way. I know Alan Bell's been playing with that to do some titles for videos that will be taken at the upcoming OggCamp.
More about that later.
Yes. And it has some quite neat features, like if you've got a copy of Blender on your system, then the OpenShot can call out to Blender to render the title sequences and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. But is there a need for this NovaCut with the distributed editing, which none of the others seem to do at all?
Well, I think one of the differences about this project is that it has got the big distributed model, which is really interesting because you now have video editors in browsers, you now have cloud-based video editors and things, so having a distributed model would make some sense. However, I have to try, I think they might have tried to bite off more than they can chew. From what I understand, that functionality isn't there, it isn't ready yet.
There's pretty much nothing that is there. I mean, okay, that's a bit unfair. There is some code, and there's a nice page on the Ubuntu Wiki that links to each of the areas that they've already created. And one of those was something called D-Media, which one of the aims of NovaCut is to be aimed at the professional or, semi-pro video creative artist.
Yeah.
And their workflow, apparently, I don't know because I'm not one of those people, their workflow is very different to a techie person. A techie person might put a stick in a machine and wait for the image to appear on the screen, a logo of the stick, and then double click it and then drag files off it and find that that's acceptable, whereas apparently artists don't, and they would rather
they like to do their file transfers in a more creative way.
And so D-Media does something which is quite cute, where you put all the sticks in and it pulls all the media off and you don't have any interaction at all, and it doesn't bother you or bug you, you get on with your stuff while that does all its stuff in the background. And so that's a kind of indication of where NovaCut is aiming for the professional user and aiming for their workflow rather than aiming to be a techie thing that might appeal to professionals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the things I was listening to an interview with one of the developers, I think there's three, did we say?
Yeah.
On Hacker Public Radio. And he was saying that a lot of what he's actually doing, like D-Media, is based on CouchDB, and like all of the actual processing stuff just hooks into GStreamer. So a lot of the stuff that he needs to be able to do all this fancy stuff already exists. He just needs to use it in the right way.
Right. So, D-Media can use CouchDB to give you the synchronization.
Exactly, yeah.
And it could use G-Nonlin or whatever it is, the video editing bit, and G-Streamer for the audio bit. Mm. But it still strikes me that there's a big gap between editing a video file on your local machine and distributed video editing.
Yes.
Well, traditionally, one of the big problems is those source files. Sorry, Laura. if you're working with RAW DV or you're working with high-definition video, they're massive, massive files. Even RAW DV is about a gig for 5 minutes worth of footage.
Yeah.
So,
and if you're making a short film,
you might have several hours worth of footage
That needs to be cut. And whilst I appreciate that the bandwidth goes up over time, that will be less of an issue. I've already got 30 meg broadband, and
believe you,
other friends have got. Sorry, I didn't mean to rub that in, Tony, with your 1 meg.
I didn't know you could even get 30.
And other friends have got 50. And
seriously,
and so it can get like super fast connections.
Yeah.
So that will become less of an issue. But then people expand to fill that, and it'll go up from 1080p to 4K video, and so the creative types who like to push the boundaries and create humongous great video files, it's still going to be an issue that distributed huge files.
But they're doing a new editor from scratch in order to be able to have collaborative function.
Yeah,
and so in the meantime, they're going to have to catch up with everything else, or at some point, they're going to have to catch up with everything else to provide the bits that are already available in every other project, or is it so going to be so vastly different?
Well, what they were saying in the interview I listened to is that their initial goal is going to be for it to be basically a cutting tool, so you just basically use it to stick clips together collaboratively, and then they could start building the whatever other features video editors have on top of that. You can tell I'm not a video person.
The ability to edit video,
and that makes sense if they've got that. If they've got it really well planned out and they know what the key features are and they do them in that order and they don't just try and copy everything else but with collaborative, that's fine. It's just, it's a massive, even doing a small application is a massive job.
So the other area of criticism they've come in for is not that they've bitten off more than they can chew, and there's, I mean, that all one's to one side. There's a lot to do.
Yeah.
The other part is there are already a lot of editors out there. There is even one that's already based on many of the tools they want to use, Pitivy.
Hmm.
And so, arguably, why don't they collaborate with an existing editor that already seeks to do what they want to do and add the functionality to that rather than build a whole new one from the ground up?
I was going to say as well, a lot of the editors that Tony tried are the ones that are on that map as being long life ones. He's not just sort of randomly picked lots of different ones. A lot of them are the longer living ones, so they've clearly got sticking power.
Yeah.
And they're attractive to people to try.
Yeah, but if you look at all the effort that's gone into all these disparate projects, if that same amount of effort had been put into one, two, or three projects, then I'm sure we would have a much more stable, featureful, usable set of video editors than we do at the moment.
And I remember you saying that when you were screaming with frustration at yet another video editor crashing.
Yeah, and it got worse. Having been able to use KDN Live for quite some time using for Raw DV, and I did the Log Radio documentary and things with it, I wanted to try and edit a little bit of HD video that I shot on my Canon 5D Mark II, my SLR camera. Mm. And that, a whole new world of pain opened up then. OpenShot kept crashing, Pitivy kept crashing, KDN Live kept crashing.
One of the things that they've said about Novacut is that one of the things they're targeting is HD video shot on digital SLRs, because I think that seems to be the kind of people they're targeting, people who don't have a big video camera, people who just have a camera and shoot video and just want to stick it together.
They shot an episode of House on one of them.
I don't see why you have to target a digital SLR. It's a video camera that shoots video.
Yeah.
That, you know, okay, they all shoot different video formats, different sizes, they have different capacities. But in the end, what a video editor is a means to take raw video, chop it up, and make a film from it.
Yeah.
So I'm somewhat suspicious about the whole targeting digital SLRs, and I think that's more of a marketing towards the artist and saying, look, we're targeting you, and we're not targeting the home user with his flip cam or you know, his mobile phone that takes video.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the IRC channel, /Ubuntu-UK-podcast on the Freenode IRC network, take a breath, Stuart Langridge has sort of said that one of the problems with video editors is not that everyone thinks they can do the user interface better, it's that everyone seems to want to use a different underlying toolkit or toolchain, and consider it more important to use the right technology, in inverted commas, than to, you know, try and fix an existing project. Mm-hmm. So they all end up getting us, you know, so far into it, realize it's probably harder than they thought it was when they started.
Fancy that.
and giving up and dying out.
But are we being somewhat disingenuous in the why don't you all work together? When you look around at the number of Linux distros there are, you look at the number of desktop environments there are, you look at the number of text editors there are, it's the open source way for you to have a not invented here and go out and carve your own way.
Yes.
I'm not saying that's right,
no,
but it is the open source way, and it's the way we've ended up with right now, a whole bunch of different desktops with, you know, everyone in this room probably running a different desktop environment, running different editors, you know, different browsers.
Yeah, I'm running Red Hat. One of the things they're doing differently with this project as well is the asking for donations to fund the work up front.
Yes.
And some people have criticized them for what they see as concentrating on the donation side more than concentrating on the actual writing code and getting a product out there.
Yeah, they had two runs at this. They had a lot of promotion a while ago, some months back, when they were trying to raise funds to develop this. And they didn't succeed hitting their target. So they had another run at it, lots of promotion. It was promoted a lot by bloggers in the Ubuntu arena, and OMG Ubuntu blogged about it, and there are people who, you know, are helping out with the marketing to try and get that. And they've hit the target. So they've got their $25,000 target. I kind of agree that maybe they should have just sat down and written the code.
Yeah. To make it sustainable, you're going to need to be looking back, getting every year having the same amount of donations or equivalent amount of donations or possibly more, in order to keep employing those developers, unless you have some other model that might take place a year or two down the line. And what happens if you don't get that? What happens if a year down the line, people who might have given you a chance while you're a startup project and haven't delivered even something vaguely workable after a year, and perhaps we're not going to donate again, and then you have to make developers redundant or whatever.
I mean, this has a limited audience. Okay, there are a lot of artists out there, but it's nowhere near the same kind of audience that apps like Chrome or Firefox.
Or yeah, if it was aimed at a normal user, yeah, and not a professional.
Yeah, so me with my flip cam, if it was aimed at from me upwards, or even from like someone with a really, really cheapo camera upwards, rather than targeting. Now, what I think is, if they're targeting the digital SLR owners, these are people who typically, I would imagine, stereotypically, would use an Apple Mac and Final Cut Pro or Sony Vega or one of the other pro tools. And so they're not averse to spending a vast amount of money on a pro tool to get the job done. These are not technical people who like to fiddle about with the command line. They're people who want a tool that just works. And so why not charge them for it?
Yeah, that's true.
But I wonder whether they are perhaps less likely to want to pay for a tool that might just work in 12 to 18 months time.
Because what I'm thinking is more that rather than getting the money up front, get the money once you've developed it by selling it, just like anyone else does. Just like, you know, Final Cut Pro is sold, or it can still be free software, but you know, sell it.
And Tony's just bought some digital camera software, haven't you?
His eyes.
I wonder what you were talking about.
Open source, isn't it?
No.
Right. It runs on Linux.
It runs on Linux, but yes, it's a
So people who are, you know, wanting to do professional quality job are going to be willing to pay for that kind of stuff. And I do agree that this Kickstarter campaign isn't sustainable in the long term.
Yeah. Well, what are your thoughts? Why not send us an email, podcast@ubuntu-uk.org, or get in touch via any of the means, which we will mention at the end of the show. It's time for the news, and we need to find out that Microsoft have paid SUSE another $100 million to renew its deal for distribution of SUSE Linux Enterprise Server licenses.
Is this good or bad? Hasn't SUSE disappeared now?
It still exists as a division of Attachmate.
Oh, of course it is, yes.
Right, okay. And that it's Microsoft selling SUSE licenses as opposed to any other brand of Linux licenses.
Yeah, basically.
Red Hat.
Yes, that's. I suppose the idea is that it gives SUSE a nice bit of promotion when they're not exactly the market leader.
Yeah, fair enough.
A new Humble Bundle has been released, the Humble Indie Bundle 3, which contains 5 independent cross-platform games under a pay-what-you-want pricing model.
Hooray. You've tried this, haven't you, Alan?
Yeah, I bought it. Yeah, actually, I saw it on Twitter and went to the site and bought it, and I appeared in the top 10 for a very short period of time of people who bought the game, and then one of the other guys on the IRC channel bought it and overtook me, and we had a little game overtaking each other by $1 at a time. And then the big guns came in and paid thousands for it.
Really? Yes. Wow.
Yeah, but the guy who makes Minecraft paid like $4,000.
Yeah.
Are they any good?
Yeah, they are. There's one of them that I'm going to install on the kids' computer. Is the
crayon physics. It's great, brilliant.
It's really, really good fun. Yeah, it's worth shelling out for.
Okay.
The Motion Picture Association has won a high court ruling requiring BT to block its customers' access to Newsbin 2, a site that indexes files shared through Usenet. BT and the Open Rights Group have argued that the ruling could create a precedent for censorship of the web. The parties will return to court in October to discuss the specific nature of the blocking order.
It's not surprising, really, is it?
Net censorship begins in the UK.
Yeah, but Newsbin 2 really is nothing more than a way for distributing films, copyrighted content from the movie studios. So it's not like you can even use the argument that, oh, well, it's like torrents, you know, I distribute my ISOs. Newsbin does nothing but distribute copyrighted content from other people.
Okay. But this is the first time they've used this tool rather than going after infringers suing them directly.
Yeah, maybe this will be more successful. I don't know. I'm not saying I agree with it, but I'm just saying I'm not surprised.
Yes, you are.
Oh, okay, I am. Okay,
that MPAA t-shirt you're wearing.
Mozilla has proposed a project to create its own web-based OS called Boot2Gecko, or B2G, on Android's kernel and primarily targeting portable devices. The goal of the project is to increase the reach of the web and create a new hardware API for web applications.
Mozilla trying to catch up to Android / Chromos as quickly as they can before they lose all the market share.
Yeah, I think so.
There was a report in the week that Chrome is now more popular in the UK than Firefox, for example.
Yeah.
Wow.
There are a lot of catching up to do.
Yep.
I use Chrome.
So do I. Everywhere.
So do I.
I don't use it everywhere, but I do use it at work.
Yeah, I don't use it in the bath. UK Business Secretary Vince Cable is, according to Channel 4 News, set to announce changes to the UK's archaic copyright law.
Hurrah!
Changes will include being able to legally parody music tracks, legally copy CDs you own to other formats. Nope, that's currently not legal in the UK, believe it or not. And legally share copies of your own music with your family.
Yeah, I have to send the children out of the room whenever I play songs because they're not the legal rights holder of the songs.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are crazy things as well. Like technically, you can't upload them to shared storage, like cloud storage and things like that.
Well, you can't rip,
can't rip it to it.
Yeah.
So if you can't rip it, then anything you do from that point onwards,
this is true,
is questionable.
Yeah. I did wonder how it affects Ubuntu One, where you're purchasing the music through a cloud service.
Well, that's all licensed, isn't it? So,
well, yeah.
Oh, so, that's true.
Yeah, that deal has been done for you by Canonical and the big music stores and Seven Digital, so we don't have to worry about that.
We are grateful for our Canonical overlords.
Apparently, Vince Cable's also going to say something about the how ineffective this is blocking websites.
Good.
Well, it's a method of controlling access to it.
yeah
yeah yeah on the other hand, it's just unworkable.
Yeah, so that's part of
way around it.
He's gonna have a great speech tomorrow.
Yeah. Look forward to that.
Tune in,
and that's the end of the news.
What? And now we've got some events.
We have indeed. As slick as anything. DrupalCon is happening on the 22nd to the 26th of August in London, and when we wrote this, they had tickets left, and as we checked just before the show started, they don't.
So
you can't go.
Is it the usual Eventbrite thing where you can...
There's a waiting list, yes.
Good, okay.
So if you're interested in Drupal, sit on the waiting list. And PHP Northwest is having its conference on the 7th to 9th of October. This time it's in Manchester, and as far as I can tell, there are still some tickets available.
Good.
So if you're
if we want to know about any event ticketing, we just contact you, is that right?
Yeah, this is it, apparently.
Are there tickets still available for OggCamp?
There are.
Slick.
Yes. We should rehearse this stuff. There are a handful of tickets. We emailed all of our attendees and said, if you know, when you booked your ticket, if you can't make it anymore, please let us know. We had a handful come back, so I think there are about like 13 or 14 tickets available.
Cool.
Through the Eventbrite page. Go to offcamp.org and you can click through. If you missed out the first time around, or you've only just realised you can be available, or you just hearing about it for the first time and you want to come along.
So when is it?
It is the week on Saturday, the 13th and 14th of August. This is our last show before OggCamp.
That's not scary.
Yeah. Laura's been doing a sterling job on the website over the last couple of weeks and has put lots more information and content up there about the venue and about accommodation and all sorts of stuff's going on there, Laura.
And speakers.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about those.
We have three tracks and one of them is scheduled. Two is the normal unscheduled, work it out on the day job, which Mark can tell you more about in a minute. But on our scheduled track, we have now confirmed we have Simon Phipps, who was there last year.
Yeah, indeed.
And Wayne Myers, who's a professional audio producer on Linux. Or he produces professional audio on Linux.
He's a musician who produces his music on Linux professionally.
The right words. Lorna Jen Mitchell, who, again, she came last year, and she's going to be talking about careers in open source. Mm-hmm. Chris Gutteridge, who we've interviewed on this podcast, is going to talk about Southampton Open Data Project. And Steve Lee, who's going to talk about accessibility in open source.
And we also have another one, which I've got to put on the list, which is Ken Boak, or Boak, sorry. I should have checked how to pronounce your name before I started saying this. Who's going to talk about the Nanode project, which is open hardware thing.
A little bit like an Arduino in some ways.
Sort of, except a lot cheaper from what I gather.
Ooh.
And we've also got the BarCamp track. So if you want to come along and give a talk about pretty much anything you like, come along and put your name down. We'll detail all the details of how you actually put your name down for talks once you get there.
Yep.
And we've got a number of slots available for people to talk about just about anything.
Yep.
Indeed. We also have some exhibitors, some people who want to come along and tell you about their stuff. Free Software Foundation Europe are going to be there and have a stand where you can, you know, buy copies of Free Software, Free Society by Richard Stallman, probably. Things like that. Hacker Public Radio, Ken Fallon and his team are going to be there telling us about their community-based podcast where you can easily get involved and send in content. O'Reilly are going to be there on the Saturday, and they're going to be offering 40% off their books.
O'Reilly?
Oh, really?
That's dangerous.
Yeah, O'Reilly. Yeah.
The lovely Josette is going to be there with her team as well.
Back my car up and load it full of books. Yeah.
Well, they have an office in basically where the venue is, so there's no excuse for them not being there.
Yeah.
And a gentleman from Empirical is going to be there demonstrating a 3D printer called a RepRap.
RepRap,
rather
isn't
cool.
I've seen them. They're awesome.
Yeah, so if you want to print, I don't know, computers or something.
3D.
Well, printers.
Printers. That'd be
printers.
Good.
Yeah.
Tell us about Wi-Fi.
So we've got probably the Wi-Fi is going to be okay on the venue. We've got them installing Wi-Fi.
We made them install right now.
But we're going to do a recce this weekend, and in the event that there's, you know, any problems or black spots or anything, we're going to try and back that up with other solutions, and it should be okay.
But we will have internet.
We will have internet, but don't rely on it 100%, you know, for, you know, paying your bills or whatever.
If you're going to do a talk, bring your slides on a USB stick, not Google Docs.
Yeah. And if you've got a 3G dongle, that'd be great. Or if your phone does 3G, then use that. You know, that would really help us.
Yeah.
There is a Wi-Fi in the park over the road. You won't be able to see the talks from there, but at lunchtime,
check your email.
There's free Wi-Fi in the park. So when we're having a picnic at lunchtime, you can catch up and get your email there.
Yes.
And that's all I have to say about Wi-Fi. Yes.
It's worth saying they are putting it in. We will be the first people using it. So, you know, there's always
expect to kill it.
Yeah. Yes.
We have some sponsors.
Yes.
Lots of lovely sponsors. So we've got Bimark.
Yep.
Hooray.
Our principal headline sponsor.
Lovely VMs. Yes.
Yep. Who we love very much. Thank you, Bimark. Chris Proctor, on behalf of lug.org.uk, has given us some cash as well.
Yeah. Google.
Yeah,
good old Google.
Stumped up.
Yeah.
And Canonical.
Thank you, Canonical.
Mm. Yes.
A bit of cash from them too.
We also are having a party on the Saturday night at the venue. We're going to kick everyone out after the talks, and then you can all come back and...
About an hour later, isn't it?
Yeah. And we've got some lovely beer, and that's sponsored by...
Or at least
some may be
sponsored. We're not going to say anything about that. But the actual evening event is sponsored by Bitfolk.
Yes.
Who are also purveyors of lovely VPS.
Lovely VPS, absolutely.
Yes,
absolutely.
VPS, that's
I think Bitfolk VPS are better on a Saturday evening.
Yes.
And during the daytime, bite marks are going to be better.
Absolutely.
That's how it works. We're going to have a raffle cast will be back, as it has been the last couple of years. We've got some
3 hours of raffle.
We have some books. We've got some hardware and some swag to give away. Maybe Google have said they're going to try and send us some stuff as well. So some bits and bobs will be there.
You have to hold them to that.
Yeah. Well, they said they will.
Maybe some other surprise prizes as well.
Yeah, we never know. So that'll be a good opportunity. It helps us swell our coffers and cover the cost of the event. Doing it down south has been quite expensive, so we do need some help. We will have mugs and T-shirts, again, as last year, which will be kind gifts to you if you donate to us. So if you donate £5 to help support Odd Camp, you can have a mug as a return. If you donate £10 to support Odd Camp, you can have a T-shirt as a return. They are quite fab and funky.
They are,
designed by Fab.
Designed by Fab. We're on fire today.
That's a plan, that.
We do need to...
Sorry, I was going to say the bit about the car park.
Yeah, go for it. Right.
That's exciting stuff.
Yeah, we were talking about the car parking last week.
Cool.
Said something about the prices. It turns out they've actually gone up a bit. On Saturday, it's going to be £4.40 to park all day.
Yeah.
And on Sunday, it's free to park all day.
Yeah.
So it's only gone up a bit.
Yes. Yeah.
So bring some change. There's a pay and display, so stick it in the machine.
Mm-hmm. And on Friday night, if you're coming the night before the event, we're going to be in the William Cobbett pub, which is just around the corner from the venue.
Next door. It's
next
like
door. Oh, literally
over
next
the road.
Door.
Over the road.
And they have a barbecue serving from 8 p.m. until 11:45 p.m. So if you want some food and some beer and some community,
yes,
then that's the place to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're serving food till 20 to or quarter to midnight. I wonder what time they actually serve drinks to. It sounds like it could be a late night for some people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Perhaps not us.
And they also do veggie stuff as well.
Yes.
So it's not just meatitarian barbecue. Good.
Cool. Well, that's about it for the Odd Camp thing. So we hope you see you there. Come along, say hello. Hmm. I'm really looking forward to it. A lot of effort, a lot of work gone into it, but it's so exciting when people turn up and give really interesting talks.
Yeah.
So we shall see you there. Come along.
Brilliant.
And say hello.
Oddcamp.org if you want more info.
And And it's time for our competition result. We had a competition in the last episode to give away an HP microserver. Can you remind us a little bit about what it is?
It's a server in a box. It's a small, like, desktop, yeah, mini, like, desktop-sized server. It's got four drive bays. It comes with a 160-gig drive, a low-power CPU, about a gig of RAM, I think it is. Mm-hmm. And it's in a little box, and it's quite twee, and it's not very noisy, and it's really quite cute.
Cool. So we had a whopping 83 entries for the competition.
Were they all right?
Most of them. There were a few that were not didn't have the full model number of the CPU.
Oh, you're being pernickety now, are you?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. You had to have the right model number.
And what was the question?
The question was basically what was the model of the CPU in the unit?
Right.
Because we got it wrong when we tried to say it.
Yeah, we babbled on about what it was. That was deliberate, totally.
So we'd have a competition question. Exactly. Obviously.
Good. Yes. And we went through the correct entries and we have a winner. And the winner is...
Oh, dear.
Ben Moench, spelt M-O-E-N-C-H.
So we'll drop an email to you, find out the shipping details, and you'll get that server very soon.
Yes, particularly if you live around the corner from Alan.
Yeah, or if you're coming to Old Camp. Oh, yes. Then you can pick it up straight from the back of my car.
That would be ideal. Yeah, open to Old Camp winners only. Excellent. So that was the competition. Well done, Ben. And we'll be having another competition in a little bit. So keep listening and you can find out about that.
So, Alan, you appear to have a black iMac.
Yes, you'd be forgiven for thinking that. It's actually not. Let me reach over and grab it. Tony, could you pass me that spectacular laptop?
I was trying to give the impression that you're sitting tapping away on it.
Oh, I see.
Alan, yeah.
Oh, no, it's running natty.
Yes. So this is a laptop that it's called a Mini, made by a company called Clausoft. And... yeah, you'd be forgiven for thinking it looks a bit Mac-like.
It's even got the square buttons.
Yeah, it's got square keys. It's quite thin.
Shiny.
It is shiny. And I think, yeah, it's got a bunch of ports and the screen is very bright. But the key selling point is it's very cheap.
How much?
£225 for the black one.
Wow.
Yeah, for a PC, £225 for a laptop. It's pretty good. And there's a white one as well, which is £250, I think. And you can also get it with Windows 7 for £295 or somewhere thereabouts.
But we won't talk about that.
No, but it does come with Ubuntu pre-installed.
That is cool.
Why does the white one cost more?
Because it's more desirable, isn't it?
It's racist.
Yes, I have no idea. I honestly don't know. But those are the prices as seen on Amazon.co.uk.
Cool.
Right.
So, yeah, I got them to send this to me, and it came with Ubuntu
10.10
installed. And you might think, oh, that's rubbish, that's old, that's not the current version. Mm. But in fact, the very first thing it did when I turned it on and logged in and, you know, got myself set up, it asked me, do I want to upgrade? You know, the dialogue pops up and says, do you want to upgrade to 1104?
Brilliant.
So I just thought, yeah, might as well. So
whatever.
So
did that work?
Yeah, it just upgraded pretty much perfectly fine. I just left it there chugging away, doing its thing.
Cool.
And rebooted and I'm on 1104.
Cool. Awesome. And... it is, I think, fair to say, a slimline laptop.
Very.
It's not as thin as a MacBook Air, but it's
not far off.
Getting that
way. No, but it has the illusion of thinness by having this curvature away from, dropping down away from the edge.
Alan is caressing the curvature as we speak. You can't see exactly.
That's probably for the best. Yeah. So, shall I run down the specs of this?
Go on then.
It's got a 1.6 gig Atom CPU, 2 gig of DDR3 RAM.
Nice.
320 gig hard drive.
Wow.
That's like pretty big. Spinning Rust hard drive.
Spinning Rust hard drive, yes. it has Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and a fairly low-res camera, webcam.
1.3 meg or something.
No, it's not. It's lower than that. I think the sticker's wrong. It's 0 point something. It's got Ethernet port on one side, HDMI, USB, and a combined microphone and... headphone jack on one side.
Yeah, right.
And on the other side, it's got an SD or combined SD card slot.
Yeah.
Another USB port and the power socket.
Cool.
Brilliant. Sounds reasonable laptop spec then.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
So what's the CPU and things?
Well, as I said, 1.6 gigahertz Atom.
So it's an Atom, so you're really looking at netbook territory rather than desktop.
It's kind of netbook performance, but with a bigger screen. And I think that's one of the things that most people moan about with a netbook is the two factors about a netbook that are annoying is the keyboard's too small and the screen's too small.
Yeah.
Whereas this has, I can't remember what resolution this is, 13 something by whatever. Hang on, let me...
Alan looks while we talk about it.
But it doesn't
happen. The other thing is it's a netbook spec and it's a netbook sort of price range as well, even though it's a full size.
But it doesn't have the benefit of a netbook that it just fits in your pocket almost.
Yeah, but I don't know. Would you?
A netbook isn't small enough to fit in your pocket.
No, it can fit in a shoulder bag or something. Yeah. That's more of a laptop size laptop.
Yeah, no, what I mean is that it's like, if you want a cheap laptop, usually you're stuck with a little one. Whereas with that, you can get a cheap laptop, same sort of spec you'd get with a netbook, but it's full size.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
I think that's what appeals to about it to me.
Yeah.
The thing that I don't like about my netbook, and my netbook is fine, and I use it when I'm down in the living room just for checking my email and things. Bigger screen.
And do stuff like photos on it.
Yeah, I could do in a pinch, I could do things like photos on it. Bigger screen, and it's light as a netbook. So it's you've not got a laptop form factor with the added weight of that.
So as a cheap laptop, what's the build quality like? Because it looks very light from the way you're waving it around.
It is really light, actually. The heaviest part of it, and this is one of the slight downsides, the heaviest part of it is the screen.
Mm. Okay, also it tips.
So as a result, when you're closing it, if I start closing the laptop, it starts to drop when it gets about, I don't know, 40 degree angle to the horizontal, it kind of drops down, and you can feel the hinge isn't super solid. High quality. It's not very rigid. It's a bit floppy, but I don't think that I think you can excuse that given the price of the thing.
Mm. Yeah,
I did wonder how much it would resist, you know, quite aggressive use. You know, maybe if you gave it to your kids or something like that, whether they would rattle it around enough that it would break or at least loosen the joints still further.
Yeah, I guess the netbooks that my kids have got, the Asus E900s, and solid, I would say they feel more solid. I guess because they're more densely packed than this, because this feels like in places like it's a bit hollow inside.
Yeah.
Because you'd expect there to be space in there because there's not much to make a netbook, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's what I would expect for the price.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a 900 quid MacBook Pro, but then again, it doesn't cost 900 quid, so you wouldn't expect it to be, you know.
So what's the battery life like?
Not fabulous. You get a couple of hours out of it, I would think. Mm. Maybe a little bit more. Depends on, you know, what kind of
what
usage.
Doing,
if you're sat there watching iPlayer or something like that, then you're going to eat the battery.
Yeah.
Are you going? Can you upgrade that? Can you replace the
battery? I don't know. It is replaceable. It's not soldered inside. It is a removable part, as it were.
It's not very big, though, is it?
It's not huge, no. But it is underneath, and it's not like sticking out, protruding anywhere or anything. Yeah. It's pretty sweet. Yeah, like your laptop, your high quality Samsung laptop.
Mine lasts about 3 hours.
Well, there you go.
4 hours.
Yes.
So, does it suspend and resume the ever-present laptop?
Yeah, I just accidentally suspended it when I demonstrated shutting the lid, and it suspends and resumes perfectly fine. So I would probably tend to just like shut the lid and slip it in the bag, and I'm pretty confident that that's not going to sit there humming away in my bag. I do worry about on Linux a lot.
I have done that before.
Yeah.
And, you know, expect it to burn out.
Yeah.
It seems to just, you know, suspend and resume just fine. And that was and I did try that on 1010 and on 1104, and it seems perfectly fine.
Cool. And you said it has an HDMI output on it. So presumably you could use that as a second monitor or a duplicate of your inbuilt display?
Yes, I haven't tested that, but I would presume it supports two screens.
But there's no VGA output?
No. No, you'd need a converter of some kind, I guess.
Yeah. Mm. Well, that's not too much of a problem these days.
Interestingly, when you get it out of the box, it's set up to log on automatically, very much like the old EPCs did.
Yeah.
Right.
There's no, I mean, the password is meanie, and the user ID is owner. But it actually makes it quite nice that you just, like, you know, turn it on and away you go. There's no, it boots, you know, relatively quite quick for the hardware that it is.
I found it was quite slow installing packages and things.
Yeah, I think it's only a single core CPU.
All right.
Let me just check that.
Yeah. I mean, I found that on my EPC because it's only got not a particularly meaty processor.
Yeah.
That when it's apt is the thing that you really notice it's doing. So if it's got the same sort of processor,
it's got an Atom N455. So I think that's hyper-threaded. I don't think it's dual core. I don't know. But yeah.
Cool.
It's okay. It's a netbook. Yeah. You know, it's a netbook with a big screen.
Yeah. So Scott Rosenquist asked if it has a PPA pre-configured for any fixes and updates after release.
Actually, no. There are no PPAs defined that I could see. I don't think.
Does it need them? Are there any problems that it needs
just,
to address?
It just works.
Brilliant.
Yeah. I've added a few PPAs, but only for software that I've added. There's no additional drivers needed that I required for like Wi-Fi or Bluetooth or the display or anything. Like I say, it just works.
Is there any evidence that there's anything other than stock Ubuntu installed on there with a pre-configured user?
Any evidence? I don't know.
That you noticed? You didn't notice anything different?
I didn't notice any additional stuff. Like, it didn't have Skype or anything like that on there, or no third-party stuff on there. It's pretty much a bog-standard install of 10.10.
Cool.
Okay. That's what I was getting at. Yeah, is there anything
else? Yeah, no, it seems to be a pretty much bog-standard, yeah.
So what sort of things do you think you could use that for? I mean, obviously, it's a laptop, but does it lend itself to anything in particular?
Sitting on the arm of the sofa, surfing Facebook, you know, which is what it seems that a large number of people tend to use netbooks for. If you're on a commute and you had like an hour's journey between home and work, then sitting on the train, you know, it'd be quite nice because it's a decent sized screen. I did try out iPlayer, and whilst it does play video in a window, full screen is really pretty painful for Flash.
Right.
So I gave up with that. And I certainly didn't try any HD video because it was just SD, just couldn't cut it.
Right. Mm.
Okay. Well, it is quite a nice swish little unit, and we've been given the unit to give away in a competition,
as I mentioned
earlier. So thanks to the nice people at Clausoft for saying that we can do so.
Yes.
We will clean it up
and put it back in the box.
The shiny comment that Laura said earlier was rather dulled when I got hold of it by the fingerprints from Alan that were all over the lid.
It's quite smudgy.
Yeah, sorry about that.
It does smudge a little bit. We will do our best to clean up the device before we send it off to you. Yeah. But yes, so we're going to set a competition. And Mark, can you tell us what the competition is and the closing date?
Yes, I can, Tony.
Thank you.
Funny you should ask.
Please do so.
Okay, the question that we're setting is, what is Clausoft's phone number? Clausoft being the company who make the Mini. And they have a phone number which you can get in touch with them via, and we want to know what it is.
So people would email that to
competition@ubuntu-uk.org.
Yay.
Excellent. Hooray. And it closes on midnight Sunday the 28th, which is the Sunday before our next live show, because Og Camp is the show in between.
Yeah.
Yes. So you've got
plenty of time.
Weeks,
like a month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we'll spend a month cleaning it up. And
Same things apply in terms of shipping and things in that.
Yeah. If it's not huge. It's not very heavy. So we could probably ship it just about anywhere. I wouldn't have a problem with that.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have the promise of Mr. Alan Pope.
If you are in the Antarctic base, please don't enter this competition. I have no idea how much it costs to ship there.
International Space Station.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think we're likely to get it to go up there.
Can't even get the shuttle up anymore. Yeah. Excellent. Well, best of luck. Enter the competition, and we'll hope that you win.
Gerald, it's time for the bit about Ubuntu. And in the first bit about Ubuntu, David Planella, who is the translation guru for Canonical, has written about a move to provide loco teams, that's the local community teams around the world, with tools to create localized ISO images rather than including all the language packs by default on one ISO image, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I thought they downloaded all the language packs on install.
There is some downloading stuff that can be done, but if you're offline, obviously you can't do that.
True.
And we ship a load of stuff like language packs on the CD. But this gives people an opportunity to do things like set the default language, because I don't know if you've ever noticed the ISO image for Ubuntu, the default language is actually American English.
Right.
And the default keyboard layout is American English,
which that's is clearly okay wrong
for, well, yeah, it's wrong for everyone like west of, you know, some particular parallel, but, or east of another one.
Either way.
And south of another one and north of another one. but yeah, it's a good idea because it means people can have localized ISO images. And so, for example, you know, someone in the street who's given an ISO image in France gets one that boots into French, which makes total sense.
It does, yes. Yeah. Presumably it means there's a lot of server space and CPU time taken to generate these ISOs.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to deal with that because there's already a lot of load generating all the different ISO images. So, it's going to be interesting to manage.
Yeah, interesting to see what happens with that one. Edward F. Maltzen of CRN has written a review of Ubuntu 10.10 Alpha 2.
11.10.
11.10 for Alpha 2, focusing on the released improvement performance. I did read this before we started, I promise. Basically, it's going to boot much faster than the old release.
Haven't we heard that before?
Yeah.
We have, but this one might actually happen.
Isn't 12 seconds what they said before?
No, it was 10.
Oh.
Yeah.
So
it gets better the higher the number.
Yes, yes.
Or slower, as the case may be.
Yes.
This was tested on a basic PC. I'm trying to find whether he was using a solid state disk.
No,
or
he wasn't. He was
standard
using
one.
Spinning disks.
Spinning Rust disks. So yeah, if that's true, and if it stays that way, as in they don't shove a load of stuff back in the last week before release and it slows it all down again.
Do you know, I'm less inclined to worry about boot time and more worried about making suspend and resume work.
Yeah.
If suspend and resume worked 100% of the time, I would almost certainly never boot the thing.
My work laptop running Lucid, I think, boots faster than any Windows machine around me. I mean, it's incredible. It's like 3 times as fast it must be. So I really don't care about faster boot speeds.
Yeah, it's fast enough.
Yeah, yeah. It's fine.
It's faster than you are.
There's got to be a point at which it's like diminishing returns. Of like, we got it 0.01 seconds faster. Yay! Great release, guys. But suspend broken.
Yes. So Ubuntu 1 has reached a landmark user base of 1 million users.
Wow.
Excellent.
To celebrate, free accounts have now been upgraded to 5 gigabytes of storage.
Hooray.
That's good.
It's rather nice.
Yeah, it was two gig before.
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
it's now 5.
And it was nearly full.
And yours?
Yeah, I still need to follow this up with Stuart Ack Langridge, because he always claimed that if you buy music, it didn't count towards your quota. That was our understanding of it.
No,
but it does seem to.
Lots of tomboy notes.
Yeah, you have an awful lot of tomboy notes.
No, I don't. But it doesn't matter now. So I have 5 gig rather than 2 gig. But they've also revised their pricing plans for the paid for storage as well.
All right. Is it cheaper or more comparable with the competition?
Yep.
You haven't checked, have you?
That's Tony Code for I don't know.
Mark Shuttleworth has blogged about contributor license agreements, suggesting that it's important to assign copyright for contributions to a project, as you don't want to be stuck with the maintenance burden of your contributions.
Is this fair?
To be honest, having written stuff and contributed it to a project, you don't necessarily, just because you wrote it and have the copyright over it, doesn't necessarily mean that you have the burden at all.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've licensed it to them and they've like under a open enough license and they can do what they want with it, and it's not up to them, they don't have to come back to you and say, oh, you wrote it, you need to do it because we don't have the license to make changes to it or anything like that.
What does the first line of the GPL header say? This software is provided without any warranty whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Read it and weep.
Hmm.
Go on, Alan, next.
Okay, boss. The Supreme Court in India has directed 17,000 courts to switch around 85,000 computers from Red Hat Enterprise Linux to a customized version of Ubuntu.
Why?
Ooh. Wow.
What do you mean, why?
Ubuntu's awesome.
Well, it doesn't actually say why, but it, you know. RHEL? If it's Red Hat Enterprise Linux, then surely that means for support they're going to have to pay Red Hat.
Yeah, no, that's...
But then if it's Ubuntu,
then you don't... Well, no. For RHEL, to get up to software updates,
to get updates you have to pay.
Oh,
to pay
Red Hat. I see. Yeah. Right, yes.
For Ubuntu, software updates are always free. So it depends on your definition of support.
Yes.
But yes.
Okay.
Is this a start of Linux distributions fighting each other for users. Not fighting, but, you know...
Competing.
Competing, that's the word I'm after.
Well, that's always going to be inevitable, really. Mm. It's not one giant happy family of free software, is it?
Isn't it?
Oh.
I don't think it ever has been.
No. Oh, sorry, the sarcasmatron just overloaded there.
Yeah.
That's interesting and good to see it in public sector and the courts and things. You think they had lots of requirements about data security and things with courts, so obviously Ubuntu deemed to pass. Yeah.
Although I did mention this to the two Indian guys I sit next to at work, and they said 85,000 computers. That's nothing in India.
That's true.
So, yeah, fair point.
Fair enough. And finally, Tristan Neo, we think, from Mozilla, has blogged about recent and future changes within the organization and some reasons why they are necessary.
What has he said?
He says things like focusing on development communities and supporting users and that sort of thing. Yeah. Basically, they think they might have lost their way a touch.
Yeah, he talks about some of the mistakes they've made and things they've tried to, the things they've tried to do to address them, like with the whole faster release cycle thing and right. motivation behind that. And, you know, did they go the right way about doing it? What might they need to do differently to make it work?
Yeah, talk about, again, integration with cloud services and social networks. So it sounds like Flock is coming back.
Yeah.
Basically, which we all were desperate to see again. Yeah, so that is all about the bit about and the not about Ubuntu this time.
And now it's time for some feedback. Ralph Green emailed us in May to express his negative feelings about Natty. He's emailed us again to say...
Back in May, I was feeling somewhat negative towards Ubuntu. Since then, I've worked on the issues I have with Natty and pretty much solved them. I've solved them well enough that I'm a happy user again.
Oh.
I've even made a good start on fixing an Eric. I wrote an article for my local lug describing my tweaks.
And we'll put a link to Ralph's article in the show notes.
Yes. That's nice to hear someone say something positive about Natty once in a while.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen often. Frame it. Print it out. Put it on the wall.
I thought it looked pretty on your free laptop.
What?
Natty.
Oh, Natty.
Yeah.
On that.
Yeah, it looked good on there.
Yeah, it looks all right. Yeah,
it's good. Yeah.
Free laptop. It's not free.
Did you pay for it?
It was paid for by someone somewhere. Zach2 wrote on our website,
I would like to say that I prefer Ubuntu's Unity to the interface on OS X Lion.
Wow.
Now, Alan, you're a resident Mac user.
Have you tried Lion?
Owner of Macs. Have you tried Lion?
Yes, I have.
What do you think?
It's very, very much like Ubuntu.
Yeah, wow.
So Ubuntu's no longer like Mac. Mac is now like Ubuntu.
Yeah. I've seen a couple of posts online where people have mentioned that OS X Lion borrows a lot from Ubuntu. Wow.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah, there are distinct similarities, like... For example, on the logon screen now on Ubuntu, we've got like the network icon and stuff, and that's now on the logon screen on OS X, which it never used to be. Mm. Stuff like that.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's quite cute.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting that our comparison's going there these days.
Yeah. Flatline BB posted on our website in response to our discussion about Ubuntu Server.
My two cents on Webmin and Landscape. Webmin is great. It helps newbies with simple tasks like adding users, but the more complicated tasks like configuring Apache are not so self-explanatory. The web interface just presents the text config files in a nice way, but doesn't always shed light on what to do with them. Landscape's also great, and I was using its free trial for a couple of months, and it was great for managing multiple systems, no matter what their physical location was, including Amazon Cloud. Rolling out updates to multiple machines was especially easy. And I think these days it's expected to have some sort of web interface for a server that's meant to be run headless. And he was much missing Landscape.
Yeah, I've used Landscape myself for a bit, and I've trialed it, and... It is a nice tool. It's nice because, you know, I've got lots of, being a nerd, I've got lots of desktops and laptops and stuff. And it's actually quite nice to just go to a web interface and hit one button, donk, and that tells all the machines to go and update themselves or go and find out what updates are available. And then you pick and choose which ones you actually want to update. You know, that's actually quite handy.
A bit like Microsoft SCCM.
Really? I wouldn't know. I don't play with that.
No, neither do I, but I know men who do.
Ah. Bones T Dog tweeted to suggest, I wonder if that T in the middle of his name is accidental in our document. Anyway,
no, it's right.
Okay, Bones T Dog tweeted to suggest.
Have you ever thought about consolidating your command line love into one place? tough visiting all the show notes.
We hadn't until you mentioned it.
Yes, thank you, Mr. T-Dog.
And that sounds like an excellent idea. If someone listens to an episode and then they go to our website, yes, having to page down through all of them to find the command is painful, isn't it? Someone should collate those onto a page or something.
Yeah, yes. It'd be great if somebody from the community could go through all the back episodes and pull them into a single HTML page.
That would be very nice.
That would be really helpful.
Form an orderly queue.
And then Mark would put it on the website, probably.
I would.
Get to it, community.
So, Paul posted on our website,
Diaspora has evolved a lot. As a distributed social networking system, it could make social networking a solid and trustworthy technology, just like email is. But we have to get more early adopters and more advocacy. Why don't you set up a UUPC Diaspora page, as well as your Facebook page? It will raise awareness among users that there is an alternative that isn't controlled by one company.
So, because we listened to our listeners, we did.
Yes.
Very meta.
We created a UUPC Diaspora page, and it's there.
Good. You can just log in, search for UPC. I did it. It works.
Excellent. Excellent stuff. Looks very much like Google Plus, doesn't it?
It does. Funny that.
And finally, the Wing Commander is on holiday again, so we've got a message.
Takes a lot of holiday.
He's retired.
Yeah, presumably his holiday cover is available, and that's the Reverend of St. Cuthbert's.
Hello. This is the Reverend Mortimer Peasgood, speaking to you from the vestry at the Church of St. Cuthbert in the village of Withering-on-the-Vine. Here in East Anglia, we have been using free software for some time, ever since the bishop ran off with a pole dancer from Ipswich, taking most of the funds for the diocese with him. And that is why I wanted to talk to you today about God. And nothing to do with the pole dancer, I'm afraid. As I was formatting the church newsletter in LibreOffice this week, I found myself saying to my Vietnamese wife, Po Minh, open source is a little bit like the Anglican Church. Open source is a sort of communion for resolving ideological conflicts and applying patches of code to our spiritual lives. If you like, God is the head developer or programmer of the soul. And you know, if Jesus was a programmer of souls today, I'm sure he would release his code under a Creative Commons license. As a wise man once said, stop, collaborate and listen. Ice is back with my brand new invention. Ah, no, that's my other sermon for Sunday. No, I was going to say, we of the Anglican faith, if I can call it that, have always believed, if it works for you, go with it, which must make us the religious equivalent of Linux. I just wondered what your listeners would think of that. And to quote Alan Schimmel, go in peace, live long and prosper, or whatever your community agrees with. Goodbye.
Did he just quote Vanilla Ice?
I think he did. And Star Trek.
Yeah. I think one day, actually, people are going to start to listen to those and think there are actually some questions inside the pieces, which there are. So, is free software like a religion? There we go. Interesting point. Send us your comments to that, and we can read them out in future shows.
Or if you know of a wacky, oddball person who likes to record himself and send to us, do that too.
Yeah, okay. And that's the end of your feedback.
And before we head off to Ogcamp, we should mention that we've been nominated for the European Podcast Awards. Please consider voting for us. We'll stick a link in the show notes. And if your German's not up to it, the 2-star ratings are for content and format. I assume we're not asking them to give us a 2-star rating there.
No, the 2-star ratings.
And how many stars can they give us?
As many as there are possible.
Yeah, give us lots of stars for both of the star ratings.
Yeah, you can put 5 stars for each.
For each star rating, each of the both, 2.
Is there a rating for slickness and professionalism?
Is there one for being able to read?
He read it.
That's all for this episode. Thank you for listening. You can find out how to get in touch with us on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org, including voicemail numbers and Twitter feeds, Facebook and IRC channels. Let us know what you think of the show and give us your thoughts about Ubuntu and the community around it. Our next episode will be recorded at OggCamp, so no live stream. However, we'll be back on Tuesday, the 30th of August, for our next live episode.
Yeah, that's it. Next stop, OggCamp.
See you there.
Thanks. See you there.
Bye-bye.
Bye.